ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
श्रीमद्भागवतम् 10th canto, chapter 16. Krishna chastises the serpent Kaliya. Text 50. Sasyaiva te mustanavas trilokyam. Shanta ashanta utamuja yonaya. Shanta peyaste Yaruna vitum satam. Status tate dharma paripsayehata. Tasyaiva te mus tanavas trilokyam. Shanta ashanta uta muta yonaya. Shanta piyaste yaruna vitum satam. Statushtate dharma paripsayehata. Tasyaiva te mustanavas trilokyam. Shanta ashanta uta muta yonaya. Shanta piyaste yaruna vitum satam. Status tate dharma pariksayehata. Tasya of him. Eva, indeed. Te of you. Amu, these. Tanava, material bodies. Tri lokyam, throughout the three worlds. Shanta, peaceful, in the mode of goodness. Ashanta, not peaceful, in the mode of passion. Uta, and also. Mudhayonaya, born in ignorant species. Shanta, the peaceful persons in the mode of goodness. Pya, dear. Te, to you. He, certainly. Aduna, now. Avitum, to protect. Satam, of the saintly devotees. Statu, who are present. Cha, and. Te, of you. Dharma, their principles of religion. Paripsaya, with the desire of maintaining. Ihata, who is acting. Translation. Therefore, all material bodies throughout the three worlds, those that are peaceful in the mode of goodness, those that are agitated in the mode of passion, and those that are foolish in the mode of ignorance, all are your creations. Still, those living entities whose bodies are in the mode of goodness are especially dear to you, and it is to maintain them and protect their religious principles that you are now present on the earth. Next text. At least once a master should tolerate an offense committed by his child or subject. O Supreme Peaceful Soul, you should therefore forgive our foolish husband who did not understand who you are. Purport. Because of their extreme anxiety In this verse, Kaliya's wives mention the same idea twice, that the Supreme Lord should kindly forgive their foolish husband. The Supreme Lord is Shantatma, the Supreme Peaceful Soul. And therefore, the Nagapatnis suggest it would be proper for him to overlook, at least this once, the great offense committed by the ignorant Kaliya. Text 52. O Supreme Lord, please be merciful. It is proper for the saintly to feel compassion for women like us. This serpent is about to give up his life. Please give us back our husband, who is our life and soul. 53. Now please tell us, your maidservants, what we should do. Certainly anyone who faithfully executes your order is automatically freed from all fear. Purport. The surrender of Kaliya's wives was now complete, and Lord Krishna immediately gave them his mercy as described in the following verses. Om Gyanachamilandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Giradhar Srivasavi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. We're at the end of the prayers by the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kaliya. And in concluding their prayers, they're going to finish glorifying the attributes of the Supreme Lord and then make a plea for mercy. Yesterday we described how the Nagapatnis began their prayers by commending the Lord, saying, what you have done is just by punishing our husband. It is appropriate. And then they offered prayers glorifying the Lord. Now they're going to ask for mercy. In glorifying the attributes of the Lord, they say, in this verse you see on the board, that all the material bodies throughout the three worlds are your creations. Whether you have a body predominated by goodness, passion, or ignorance. A body predominated by goodness means peaceful. The senses are controlled. As soon as you say peace, you must automatically think of mind and sense control. The great problem in the world today is that they expect that there's going to be world peace with unlimited sense gratification. Let the senses and the mind be completely out of control and let us live in peace. It's not going to happen. There will be no economic stability. There will be no political stability until people at least learn how to control their mind and senses. So please, keep this in mind. As soon as you hear talks about peace, look for the program for controlling the mind and senses. If that's not there, you know you're just hearing hot air. This is our easy answer to the peace issue. Whether it's national peace or global peace or whatever. Unless there's a program how to train people to control their mind and senses, there'll never be any peace. The first class person in society, the spiritual elitist, is topmost because he or she controls the mind and senses. There must be such a spiritual aristocracy in society. But that spiritual aristocracy is not limited by birth. What does birth have to do with whether you actually have qualifications? Of course, if you are born in a family which maintains the culture of peace, then you have a very good chance to be peaceful. Nevertheless, you must show your qualifications. That is why Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, guna karma, vibhagasha. According to your quality and your activities, you are classified. Therefore, it is a prime purpose of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement to develop a spiritual aristocracy by qualification. And anyone can be a member of the aristocracy. It doesn't depend on who your father is. It doesn't depend on your ethnic background. To be a member of Lord Chaitanya's spiritual aristocracy, you simply take up the process for becoming free from passion and ignorance. At least stand in goodness, and from there make your step to the transcendental platform. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes the symptoms of the spiritual aristocracy. Shamo dhammastapa shaucham shantir arjavam evaja janam vijnana astikyam brahma karma swabhavajam. Peacefulness, control the mind and senses. Tolerance, purity, honesty, simplicity, and possessing both knowledge and experience knowledge. Jnana, vijnana. These are the symptoms of the spiritual aristocracy. And that aristocracy is open to everyone. Just like if you want to go to university, you take a test. The test is open to everyone. If you get the appropriate grade on the test, you can go to university. So similarly, we are open to everyone who wants to be trained how to become peaceful. You cannot be peaceful without training, especially in this very agitated, very bewildering period of human history. Our association of devotees is not a religious club of believers. It is a sangha, an association of those who want training in order to develop the qualities of the spiritual aristocracy. That has to be in your program. If you want to be of any value to yourself, to your family, and to society, you must undergo training to be peaceful. Without peacefulness, what can you do for anyone? You can say, oh, I love you. Oh, I care for you. Oh, I'm going to work for you. I'm going to support you. Oh, I dedicate my life to you. But really, what can you do if you're not peaceful? You're simply contributing to the already overdose of agitation in the world. All in the name of love and friendship and being a good citizen, you're simply contributing to the ocean of agitation that is Kali Yuga. If you actually care for yourself, if you actually care for others, then undergo training how to control the mind and senses. Then you can do something for the world. This Krishna consciousness movement has the potency to transform the world by this creation of a spiritual aristocracy. The aristocracy is open to anyone, whoever wants to take up the work. Now, it's not that just the bodies in the mode of goodness come from the Supreme Lord. Also, the bodies that are in passion and ignorance, they're all the Lord's creations. Nevertheless, as the Nagapatnis are pointing out, those who have bodies in the mode of goodness are especially dear to the Lord. Even though the mode of goodness is material, it provides a firm foundation to step into bhakti. It's very easy if you're accustomed to controlling your mind and senses, to living simply. It's very easy to contemplate the ultimate goal of life. What we're dealing with now in the world is that there's really very little mode of goodness going on. Everyone who is approaching Krishna consciousness is, for the most part, coming from passion and ignorance. What is passion? Does passion simply mean lust, as ordinarily known? Sometimes people think mode of passion means those persons who are really chasing after so many sex partners and are really greedy for money. That's the mode of passion. I'm not like that. No, mode of passion means you have material hankerings. You have material desires. And these desires push you. You want to achieve something in this world. That's the mode of passion. You want to achieve status. You want to complete your economic, political, academic goals. That's the mode of passion. You want to acquire things, purchase things. That is the mode of passion. Worse is the mode of ignorance, when you just take lots of intoxication and sleep. This is the background of persons coming to Krishna consciousness these days. Passion and ignorance. Practically no one is coming from the mode of goodness. Because the mode of goodness is very fertile for making spiritual progress, the mode of goodness and those bodies that are in the mode of goodness are dear to the Lord. The verse explains that the Lord comes to this world especially to protect the religious principles of those in the mode of goodness. In other words, without basic social sanity and tranquility, how can there be any hope for spiritual advancement? Our temples should be oases in the desert. When someone comes to our temple, they should feel, I've just come out of the storm into the tranquility. I found an island amidst the mad ocean of material desire. They should feel that way. They should see everything as revolutionary clean. The temple should be so clean that people are astonished. How do they keep a place like this? That is very impressive. That is one of the symptoms of the spiritual aristocracy, cleanliness. It takes work to be clean. It takes work to clean. That's another reason why devotees live simply. Because the more you have, the more you have to clean. It's like whenever I visit householders, and if they have a big house means, you know, for the most part, two bedrooms, and I see everything is spotlessly clean, I always compliment the wife. I say, oh, I can see that you're working very hard to keep this place clean. The more you have, the more you have to clean. The bigger your house, the bigger your cleaning efforts. So unless you're rich and you have servants, you're going to spend a lot of time cleaning. Therefore, just that factor alone causes devotees to live simply. If I have a car, I've got to keep the car clean. If I have two cars, there's two cars to clean. If I have a one-bedroom house, I've got to clean it. Two-bedroom house, more cleaning. Three-bedroom house, even more cleaning. If you always think that like that, whatever I have to clean and maintain nicely, you'll live very simply. Because you don't want to spend your whole day cleaning unnecessarily. You want to spend your time trying to understand Krishna, as we were discussing yesterday. Now, after offering these prayers to the Lord, glorifying the Lord's qualities, the Nagapatnis, the wives of Kali, are going to get down to the real thing, the appeal for mercy for Kali. As we said yesterday, at first the Nagapatnis were happy and satisfied that Krishna was stomping on Kali's heads. Because they knew, this Kali is such a nonsense. We've tried to preach to him before about being a Vaishnava, but our husband refused to listen to us. Therefore, when Krishna was dancing on his heads, and all the poison and blood was being vomited out of the mouth of Kali, his wives were happy. They were saying, let that atheist die. We don't care. We'll all be widows and engage in the service of the Lord. But then, by the stomping of Lord Krishna on Kali's heads, Kali finally came to his senses. And so the Nagapatnis could see that. Look, he's getting some realization because of this rare contact with Krishna's lotus feet, contact that even Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, can't get. His mind is changing. He's almost dead, but he's coming to some realization. So then they began to appeal to the Lord. Our husband's becoming a Vaishnav. Spare him, let him live. So now they're asking for mercy. At least once, a master should tolerate an offense committed by his child or subject. O supreme, peaceful soul, you should therefore forgive our foolish husband who did not understand who you are. Now, try to get into the emotions of this presentation. They're in such anxiety that they've twice said the same thing. Please forgive him. Please forgive him. Twice in the Sanskrit they said like that. That means they're really absorbed in this. Now, it's natural that women are attached to their husband. But they've already shown they're more attached to the Supreme Lord. They were ready for their husband to die. They knew he had offended Krishna. He had offended the residents of Vrindavan. He had polluted the Jamuna River, Krishna's personal playground. So they were ready for him. Let him die. We don't care. But as soon as they saw the spiritual qualification arising in their husband, then they began to defend their husband with female expertise. Everyone knows that when women want to defend their husband, they're very expert at that. Oh, you know, you don't understand. I know. He was thinking this and that. You misunderstand. Otherwise, if they're angry at their husband and someone is criticizing, they'll just be quiet. But when they're in a good mood, then they are very expert in defending. So now the Nagapatnis are in a good mood about their husband, so they're defending. That's to be expected. So they're telling Krishna, you are Shantatma, you're the supreme peaceful soul. Because you're supremely peaceful, you're able to forgive. Only someone who is peaceful can forgive others. You know yourself that when you're angry and disturbed, you don't want to forgive anyone. Let them die, I don't care. Serves you right. I won't forgive you. I hope you suffer even more. When someone has really offended you and disturbed you, it's hard not to think like that. How dare you do this to me? I hope your suffering multiplies unlimitedly. Even sometimes in our Krishna conscious movement, due to improper dealings between devotees, devotees can become severely offended and become very angry. So, the Nagapatnis are pointing out, Lord, you are supremely peaceful, therefore you can forgive. And on the other side, they're pointing out the qualities of their husband. He is ajanata, mudasya tvam ajanata. He's a fool. Moreover, he doesn't understand you. He doesn't understand anything about Bhagavan. Since he's a fool, he's a candidate to be forgiven. He's a mudha. He didn't know what he's dealing with. He didn't know he's dealing with the Supreme Lord. So therefore, because you are supremely peaceful, you can forgive. And because he is foolish and does not know, ajanata, therefore he can be forgiven. In this way, the ladies very eloquently made their presentation, full of emotion. They're telling Krishna, just one time overlook his offense. If he does it again, you can finish him. But just this one time, please overlook his offense. The acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, give further amplification to what's going on. Krishna tells the wives, I just need to stomp on his head 8 or 9 or 10 more times. Yes, I have cleansed him of all contamination by my dancing, but there's still some remnants left. I just need to stomp on him a few more times only. And then the Nagapatnis reply, but he's almost dead. If you give him any more of your special mercy, he'll be finished. He'll die. And then Krishna says, so what if he dies? Why should he keep that horrible snake body? Let him die and have a spiritual form as my devotee. Then the Nagapatnis say, but if he dies, we'll be without a husband and we'll be forced to enjoy with some other snake. We'll be bereft of our husband and some other male snake will force us to cohabit with him. So better you let him live. We're asking on his behalf. They pray to the Lord, just look at us, consider us, forget him. Just look at our plea. Consider our plea, our heartfelt plea. And of course, that is very effective because the Nagapatnis are exalted devotees. Because they are appealing on Kaliya's behalf, the Lord agrees to be merciful to Kaliya. He tells them, all right, because you've asked, I'll accept. But I'm going to give one order. I'll tell you later what that order is. In text 52, notice how the Nagapatnis make their plea. O Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, please be merciful. It is proper for the saintly to feel compassion for women like us. This serpent is about to give up his life. Please give us back our husband, who is our life and soul. That is the dharma of human civilization. The husband should be qualified, and therefore the wife very easily can say that he is my life and soul, my prana. But that requires qualification. There has to be material qualification to be responsible for the family, and there has to be spiritual qualification to be the dharmapati, the spiritual head of the family. And then it's natural. The wife will give her heart and say, you are the life and soul. You are the prana. So the Nagapatnis can see, our husband has developed qualification. Let him live. Lord, please don't stomp him again. He's almost dead. Then they finish with the standard request by anyone who is a true devotee. Now please tell us, your maidservants, what we should do. Certainly anyone who faithfully executes your order is automatically freed from all fear. They're placing themselves at the Lord's disposal. Tell us what to do. Please order us. Kinkarinam, by the maidservants. They're referring themselves as Krishna's maidservants. And what does Lord Chaitanya say? I Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram. O son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your maidservant. Eternally. Please pick me up from this ocean of repeated birth and death and place me as one of the atoms, particles of dust at your lotus feet. In Vrindavan, the gopis are always presenting themselves as the maidservants of the Supreme Lord. Similarly, the queens of Dwarka, although they are living in opulence, they are telling, we're just Krishna's maidservants. In Vaikuntha, the Lakshmis, the goddesses of fortune, they sweep the marble palaces, the marble walls and ceilings, which are spotless because there's no dust in Vaikuntha. But still, they take brooms and sweep the walls and ceilings to try to get the mercy of the Lord. Even though there's no dust there, they're sweeping because they want to attract Krishna's attention, Lord Narayan's attention. To be a maidservant means you do what you're told. Have any of you ever had a maidservant in your house? It's rare in the West, unless you're extraordinarily rich. But in India, people, you know, even middle-class person can have a maidservant. Anyone had a maidservant before? Yes. You can just do this, do that. Yeah? Yes. Well, that is how the devotee presents himself or herself to the Supreme Lord. I'm your maid servant. It's very easy to deal with a faithful, obedient maid servant. And so that is the classic way to surrender to Krishna. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya certifies Ramya Kachchit Upasana Vajavadu Vargena Yakalpita. There's no better way of loving Krishna than that demonstrated by the maidservants, the cowherd girls of Vrindavan. Their whole life was simply Krishna's pleasure. They had no other way of thinking about pleasure except, is Krishna happy? That's it. They never thought of themselves. Even when they were dressing, they would dress themselves thinking, Krishna will enjoy looking at us. There's nothing selfish whatsoever. When they ran to the forest in answer to Krishna's flute playing, what was their mentality? Let us give pleasure to Krishna, not let us enjoy. They actually thought, Krishna's enjoyment is not complete without us. It's not that they were thinking, oh, our enjoyment is not complete without Krishna. No. Even when sometimes they would say like that, they wouldn't mean that the way we think they mean it. They're simply thinking, how can Krishna's pleasure truly be successful unless we're involved, because we are the most qualified in loving affairs. Therefore, Krishna must have us. He's a supreme enjoyer. We are the best for enjoyment. Therefore, Krishna must have us. So there was no selfish motive. Now the Nagapatnis have ended their presentation to the Lord, presenting themselves as maidservants. In Bhagavad Gita, remember Arjuna, the Lord tells him, deliberate on what I've told you in all the 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Think about it and do what you like. Yateshtasitatakuru. And what does Arjuna reply? He says, I have thought about it. My illusion's now gone. Nasta moha smitya labdha. And so what now? Karishye vachanam tava. I am prepared to act according to your instruction. I place myself at your disposal. That is the natural result of proper purification in Krishna consciousness. Now, in conditioned life, we're always placing ourselves at our own disposal. Yes, whatever my senses tell me, I'll be ready to do. Whatever comes into my mind, I will surely surrender to. From the time you begin your day, you're meditating on the senses. What are they going to tell me today? What are my senses going to tell me? How are they going to dictate to me today? Where will my senses lead me to today? But as you become purified by bhakti yoga, you start thinking, how will I please Krishna today? What could be best done for Krishna's pleasure? Now, sometimes I know that devotees think it's hopeless to ever attain such an exalted state of devotion. Therefore, they minimize any beginning efforts to think about what pleases Krishna the most. They think, oh, that's for the highest devotees. I'm nowhere near that platform. I just have so many selfish desires. Why should I pretend and start the impossible process of always thinking about what Krishna wants, what's best for Krishna? What more do you want out of me? I'm trying to follow the regular principles. I'm chanting my 16 rounds. And you want me to go further than that and start to meditate on what among various Krishna conscious options is most pleasing to the Lord? That's just going too far. What more do you want out of me? I'm a devotee. I have neck beads. What more do you want? I thought it's enough just to chant 16 rounds and follow the regular principles. But you see, by chanting at least 16 rounds and following the regular principles, you start to become more and more sensitive to Krishna. Becoming more sensitive to Krishna means you're more able to develop love for Krishna. Love means to take the interests of the beloved. How many of you would want a husband or wife who just says over and over again, I love you, but they never do what you want or do anything to care for you? You wouldn't want that. You want to see some signs that the other person is taking your interest to heart. That is true in the mundane sphere, and certainly it is true in the spiritual realm. Development of bhakti means more and more taking Krishna's interest as our life and soul. Then you can begin to contemplate Radha Krishna Pranamur Jugala Kishore. Radha Krishna, O youthful couple, you are my life and soul. That's what happens when you take Krishna's interests as foremost in your life. So don't be discouraged thinking, why should I begin that process when it's such a long way to go? You really mean it's so significant for me in my lowly situation to make a puny effort to start thinking this is the best for Krishna that I could do at this moment? Or even praying to Krishna, I don't know what is the best thing for you. There are various options. Please reveal to me what the best thing to do for you is. This beginning seems so paltry, so tiny. Why make a big deal out of it? But it is a big deal. And don't ever become overwhelmed by feeling hopeless. Krishna will make the process work for you. One last thing. The Nagapatnis prayed that the living entities, after the cosmic annihilation, when they're asleep, merged in the body of Mahavishnu, they can't be roused for the next creation to act on their dormant material desires unless the Lord wakes them. So the Nagapatnis are in effect saying, because the living entities can't wake up and begin their activities of material desire in the next creation without the Lord's help, similarly, the living entities can't come to Krishna consciousness without the Lord's help. They recognize our husband Kalia has gotten Krishna's help. He's gotten the special mercy that even the goddess of fortune can't get. The Lord is dancing on his head. Remember the prayer of Srila Prabhupada when he first arrived in the USA? He said, how will these people ever become Krishna conscious? They're so saturated by passion and ignorance. But I know, my Lord, that you are the supreme mystic. By your will, they were put into Maya, and by your will, they can come out of Maya. I know that if the message of Bhagavatam penetrates through their ears to their heart, then the process of bhakti can begin. So Srila Prabhupada described that I don't have any qualification, but I have firm faith in the mercy of Krishna. So on the one hand, everything looks impossible. Passion and ignorance is everywhere. On the other hand, everything is possible because of Krishna's mercy. So it is these two realities that make up a devotee's life. The impossible and the possible. The impossible is because of passion and ignorance everywhere. The possible is because of Krishna's mercy. So please don't make the mistake of thinking, there's no point in my pretending I'm going to attain an advanced stage in bhakti. So why should I even begin to consider what's most pleasing for Krishna? Do you mean when I am walking around here in the temple, I should be actively thinking what's the best thing I can do now for Krishna's pleasure? Yes, you should. But what's the big deal? I mean, I'm such an insignificant servitor. Does it really matter? Yes, it does matter, because that is the beginning of the path to the love of Krishna. When you start to take Krishna's interests as your own, you're presenting yourself as Krishna's maidservant. This is the beginning of that. So don't think these efforts are so inconsequential that there's no point in even making them. This is a way, if you do that, you're tricking yourself out of spiritual advancement. It is possible to develop more and more consideration of what is best for Krishna. You have to start somewhere. So don't minimize the value of any efforts that are made to begin that great quest of how to always think of Krishna's interests, Krishna's pleasure. All right, any questions? If you cannot hear the voice within of the super soul, then you listen to the voice without of your spiritual master. The conditioned soul has the support coming from the Shastra, from the spiritual master, from the Vaishnavas. If you know how to take advantage of all that support, you won't go astray. Sometimes there are difficulties because this world's a difficult place. You're trying to become Krishna conscious in the material atmosphere. Sometimes even amongst devotees there are difficulties, misunderstandings. But if you always know how to take guidance from these three sources, the Shastra, spiritual master, the Vaishnavas, then you'll cross over the difficulties. Don't blame Krishna when there are difficulties. That's the nature of this world that you chose to come to. But glorify Krishna that you cross over the difficulties. That's the abnormal thing, that someone crosses over difficulties. Okay? Yes.
I think maybe for some people it could be difficult, the concept of total surrender, or even know that to be a goal. Because we're used to in material relationships where if you put yourself in someone's service, you get exploited. Or you know what I mean, material relationships, if you do that, and just someone can take advantage of it. And so then there can be a sort of a misunderstanding about what I mean, surely the Supreme Lord is not total opposite.
Yes, that's why we need to perform devotional service so we gain confidence in Krishna. The more we engage in service, the more we realize Krishna will give me more than I deserve. But in the beginning, we're fearful of Krishna. I don't want to get too close to Krishna. I want to deal with Krishna just enough that I don't materially suffer, but I don't want to deal with him too much because then it'll take away my material enjoyment. I just got to find the right position where Krishna takes away my material distress, but he doesn't take away my material happiness. That's it. Yeah. Material happiness. Why would we want to lose that? The purpose of God is to give us material happiness. No, the purpose of the Supreme Lord is to give you something far beyond material happiness. But we're so tiny in our... We're such small timers, we can't conceive of anything beyond material happiness. And so, if we think Krishna is threatening our material happiness, we get very paranoid. So yes, we have all kinds of psychologies like this. Just serve Krishna enough, but not too much. Yes?
Generally, I find that... People have all goodness, like a lot of people have in all three modes. Like some of it is good, some of it is Prashant, and the last one, ignorance, all three of them. How do you kind of balance and grow only one of the three?
How do you what?
Balance. Like, if I were to say, for example, like, there are some aspects of my life that are very peaceful, some aspects of my life that are ignorant.
Which are those aspects?
Like, from my work point of view, is I'm very much confident, like I know what I'm doing, what I'm not doing.
At your work?
Yeah.
So how is that goodness? It could be pride, passion. I am competent. I know what I'm doing. That's passion.
Bit of that. So it's
huh?
Also, but when it comes to dealing with a lot of particularly in social circles, there's lots of things that I don't understand right away. Like I'm ignorant of those things.
Like what?
In social circles.
Yes.
There are few instances in life where I'm ignorant.
Yes.
So, like, it's both.
Ignorance means unnecessary sleep and intoxication. You don't do that, do you?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's no ignorance in you. Now, what about goodness? Goodness, to be sattvagun, mode of goodness, doesn't mean you pat yourself on the back and say, I'm a good person. I don't park in parking spaces for the handicapped. I'll never forget when Sankirtan devotee told me that she was distributing books in Auckland, and she approached one man. And, oh, I'm okay, I'm fine, I don't need your message, I'm quite all right. I know that I am doing everything as I should. There's so many other people out here who need you, not me. I'm okay. Why am I okay? Number one, I don't park in places for the handicapped. And number two, I don't abuse children. I'm fine. That was the standard. I'm good. Especially in California, in the USA, when you stop someone, say, how are you doing? Immediately, I'm good. I'm good. So people have this cheap conception of what goodness is. Sattvagun is actually quite rare in the world these days. Sattvagun means brahmana, not by birth, but by quality. Someone who has the symptoms of sattvagun, mode of goodness, knows how to control the mind and senses. They are very clean. They are tolerant. Simple living, and they have accumulated Vedic wisdom, and they've applied that Vedic wisdom. Therefore, the mode of goodness is very special, but still it's not the ultimate goal of spiritual life. The ultimate goal of spiritual life is to go beyond the mode of goodness. Therefore, we're inviting everyone to become a part of a spiritual aristocracy based on qualification. That's what the world needs now. Here at the temple, you're having nice programs, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vai Bhav. That's all to create a spiritual aristocracy of learned persons who can guide themselves and guide others. First, you have to guide yourself before you guide others. The whole purpose of the temple schedule is to develop peacefulness. There's regulation. Regular attendance at the programs makes you very peaceful. Not to speak of giving you a direct connection to Krishna. This is our purpose, how to change the world. So we're very happy that so many young students are coming forth. This weekend we had a very wonderful retreat. Almost 100 young students and professionals, all eager to learn how to become part of Krishna's spiritual aristocracy based on qualification, not birth. So then you can see the world has a future. So the more you can make this temple a vibrant place of learning and purification, the more the deities will shower their mercy upon you. The temple is not a place for people to hide out and be lazy. Oh, I don't want to work, so let me live in the ashram. No, it is not for that. The temple is a place for becoming trained how to have topmost qualities so you can help others. Yes?
Last
in like this Kaliyas instance, like Krishna forgets his demon. But if you see like all of other Krishna pastime, Krishna has to kill the demon. So why Krishna kill the demon? Why can't like he change the consciousness of the demon, like become a devotee, make him a devotee?
When Krishna kills a demon, just by the touch of the Supreme Lord, that demon is liberated from material existence. Most of the demons that Krishna kills, they have a bad attitude. Although they're absorbed in thinking of Krishna, it's unfavorable. So they have to, once they're killed by Krishna, they're free from material existence, they merge into the body of the Lord, but they can't stay there. They have to start doing devotional service. There are some special demons who are understanding Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kaliya understood that. Other demons, they just understand he's a powerful person who killed us. But Kaliya understood this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the big difference. And then he had his wives who pleaded his case. They were exalted devotees. That's the advantage of having a wife who's a devotee. She can plead your case to Krishna. Don't kill him. He's a Vaishnav now. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.